Hello and welcome to the Wicked Podcast. I'm Cindy McMahon and I'm a public educator with Guelph Wellington Women in Crisis. This is a really special episode for WIC because I got to sit down with Mia Golden. Mia is the daughter of Marianne Golden, who was a client who stayed at our shelter after leaving an abusive relationship and who then went on to give back to women in the community as a volunteer and a staff member at the shelter before she was killed by a partner in 1992. If you've ever wondered why our shelter is named Marianne's Place, or why Marianne's Park is called Marianne's Park, they're named for her. Mia and I talked about her incredible mother, about the tragic end of her mother's life, the impacts of femicide on Mia's family, and about the ways her mother's beautiful spirit shines on. As you might imagine, this episode could be tough for some folks to listen to. Mia shares details about her mother's femicide that could be distressing, so please take care of yourselves and skip the episode if you need to. But if you're ready, here's my conversation with Mia.
I always start these by just asking if people can introduce themselves. And so I wondered if you would mind telling us a little bit about yourself and about your connection to Women in Crisis.
Hi, so my name is Mia Golden. I am one of six children of Marianne Golden. As young children, we entered the shelter when my mother left our abusive father. He was a great dad, but not such a great husband when he drank. My mother was soft. Oh, I'm sorry, I'm done there. I started number two without you.
Oh, that's okay. You can say whatever you need to say in whatever order you need to say it.
Okay. So if I'm reading, is it still coming out sounding okay?
It's gonna sound great.
Okay.
Yeah. This stuff is really hard, and if you need to read it, you read it.
Okay. Thank you.
Do you mind if I know I have the questions in a list here? Do you mind if I ask you like kind of follow-up questions, or will that throw you? Like, do you want to just go through
No,
the questions as well?
that's fine. Yeah, anything you want, I'm open.
Yeah, because I wondered if you could talk a little bit about, what your childhood experiences were like. Like, what was it like to be a child and to come through the shelter?
So what I remember was when mom left dad, we didn't see a lot of the violence. We heard it, but when she finally found about women in crisis and how to get in touch with them, and she had a place, she had women in crisis to go to. I remember I was 11, and I remember we lived in a farmhouse, and my mom called all of us to the living room, and her and dad were standing there, and she let us know that she was leaving, and she gave us all the option of what we wanted to do. So as we were deciding, my dad was there and crying and realizing the mistakes he made, and he didn't want to see us go. So it was a very tough decision. But five of the six of us decided to go with mom. And so when we went to the shelter, it was a two-bedroom apartment. It was tight quarters. But it was good. It was some freedom for all of us.
And was it your family staying in the shelter, or were there other folks there?
I believe it was just us at the time, so we got lucky a little bit with the timing.
Yeah. How long did you stay? Do you remember?
It's very difficult to remember.
Yeah.
I would say probably, if I had to guess, 3 to 3 weeks to a month.
Okay.
Because they were very helpful in helping mom find some place to bring us, so.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Can I ask, what was your mother like? Like, I wondered if you had any favorite memories that you could share.
My mother was soft-spoken, gentle, very kind and caring, just a beautiful soul. Some of my favorite memories were all the Sunday dinners she would make and invite us all over. The meaningful one-on-one conversations she would share with each of her children. She always gave us time one-on-one. And those conversations she would sh share with us, she taught us to follow in her footsteps and to be kind and thoughtful people.
Everything that I have ever heard about your mother has just been about like what a beautiful person she was.
Thank you. She really was.
Yeah, she seems like such a gift to the world.
Definitely. Thank you for saying that.
So I'm sorry for this next bit. For people who aren't familiar, could you tell us what happened at the end of your mother's life?
Okay, so after escaping the abuse she endured at the hands of my father and settling the family in housing, she wanted to repay Guelph Women in Crisis and share her story with other women. So she then became a volunteer and soon became a counselor. Although she didn't have the schooling, she unfortunately had the knowledge. She had more difficulties in the years to follow with the house fire and a robbery. She'd put on her warm smile and head out the door to help others. A friend of hers asked her to help one of his friends who was suffering from depression. And she didn't hesitate, and they started talking over the phone. It started to become a regular occurrence, and before long, they began dating, even though there was 20 years between them. At this time, my youngest sister was 7 years old. And as time went on, he started becoming more controlling of my mother and was jealous of the time she was spending with others, especially my youngest sister. After they'd been together about 6 years and I'd moved out, I became pregnant with my first child. My mom was there for his birth and she was really overjoyed. But it was about 2 weeks later, they visited with us, and we watched a made-for-TV movie where a man drowned his wife. He was strangely quiet that night. And when they left, I asked him if he wanted to kiss the baby goodbye. He gave me an eerie stare and turned and walked out the door. The following night, after the baby was asleep, I was going to bed, and I can remember hearing lots of sirens as I was drifting off. Then my phone rang. My sister, who was 13 at the time, is calling out to me over the answering machine. She's saying, "Mia, Mia, put your boyfriend on the phone. Put your boyfriend on the phone." This was about 11 o'clock at night. I'm like, "No, what's wrong? No, what's wrong? Mia, just put him on the phone. Put him on the phone." I'm like, "No, I just tell me." She goes, "Mia, Tim stabbed mom." And I'm like, "What? What's going on?" So then I gave the phone to my boyfriend at the time. And they talked for a little bit, and I was just waiting to hear what's going on, what's going on. And then after they hang up, he's like, "I'm gonna go there. I gotta go there." I'm like, "I had to stay with the baby. He was only 2 weeks old. He was still sleeping." And so I just kept praying and praying. "Please let her be okay. Please let her be okay." And I just kept praying. And then I had this thought go through my head. And I'm like, "Okay, if he comes home, then I know she's not okay." And then he pulled in the driveway. So he had stabbed her, and she didn't make it.
I can't imagine how tough that must have been for you to have to stay back and just wait and to wonder.
It felt like an eternity. It
I
really
bet.
did.
Yeah, I bet. But your younger sister was actually in the home when this happened.
She was so. She had explained to me that she had gone shopping with mom. They went and got some groceries and she had come back and she said that they were cuddling on the couch when she went to bed. But she woke up hearing my mom just saying, "No, I love you. I love you. No." She came downstairs and she saw my mom on the floor and she said, that her eyes were crossed and that she had some vomit coming out of her mouth. She called 911, and her first call, for some reason, it hung up. She had made a stool in school that day and brought it home to show them. Then she grabbed that and started hitting him with it. And then
Wow.
he started getting up. He started getting up to come to her. And so she ran out the door and to the neighbor's house and made the 911 call from there.
Terrifying
Very.
and just so bold. Like, what a bold child.
She's a tough one. She continues to be tough today.
I bet that's true.
She's
Wow.
very proud of herself, how she hasn't let this affect her life. She's been so strong.
Can you say more about that?
Yeah, so after this happened, she came to live with me. And she was a big help. She helped me with the baby. She's just a fighter. I think she took her a lot of her pain with helping out with the baby and helping out, kind of help keep her distracted a little bit, and to help keep me strong too.
It's amazing to me how, like, the women in your family, yourself included, like, your ability to turn, like, pain and tragedy into helping other people is, it's really something. And I imagine that was a lot of your mother's doing.
Thank you. I definitely agree it was. She was just such a good example.
So then there you are, a person with a 2-week-old baby. And you have your younger sister
Oh.
coming to live with you, and the worst things have just happened. Do you have a memory of how you coped, like, in those early days?
Definitely had having a baby was really helped me focus. I remember the funeral and how difficult that was, and trying to be the mom. I didn't have her there to help me with the breastfeeding, and I kept trying, and I didn't realize it, but one day my grandmother showed up at the door with a can of formula and said, "We might have to go this route." So, not knowing, he probably wasn't getting enough at that time when I was trying to breastfeed. Thank God she came and rescued me at that time. And thankfully, we switched to formula and everything went well from there. But staying focused on him and trying to keep communication open with my sister and helping guide her through her tough times kept me busy enough that I didn't go downhill. Unfortunately, one of my sisters, between me and the youngest, did suffer on her own and turn to doing drugs. And unfortunately, she got in heavier and heavier. And so she passed away at the age of 37.
Wow, so young.
Yeah.
What would you say were the lasting impacts of your mother's death on you and your family?
Deep sadness. Not a day goes by that we don't think about her and miss her, even after 33 years. Every time I hear about intimate partner violence, it saddens me even more. I feel like I'm missing a big piece of my heart. I just hope people hear the message that I'm trying to send. Be safe and know the signs. Protect yourself, protect your family.
Is that what you're hoping people will take away from this? Because you started to talk about your story a little bit more this year. Is that what you're hoping that sharing it will mean for people?
Almost definitely. Like I said, knowing the signs, we didn't know at the time, none of us. It wasn't blatantly obvious because Mom kept that to herself. She She thought she had it. She thought she could change him. So yeah, by being her voice in any way I can, I hope that it can help other people recognize. Don't wait until it's too late. You need to stand up for yourself. You need to protect your children, and you need to know the signs. If you're being controlled, that's not a loving relationship in any way. You need to watch out for that.
That message to me seems especially important because it always seems like we have, I think, as a society, a pretty good handle on physical abuse. Like we understand like physically abusing your partner is wrong. When that stuff happens, people take it really seriously and they're better able to see those signs. But what you're saying about control is so true, right? Like control is so dangerous in cases of intimate partner violence. And we do, I think, often tend to brush it off, or we don't know that this is a huge warning sign to look out for.
That's true, or we blame ourselves. We think we're doing something wrong, and you're not. This person is trying to control you. They're not every person is, but there are ones out there that take it to the next level.
Yeah, I'm really struck too by what you said about, your sister hearing your mom say, "I love you," to the person who was attacking her, right? Like it just seems like such a common reaction from people being harmed, right? Like if we can
I
just
agree.
express like enough love and enough care, then maybe we can change this behavior.
That's true, and I see it like I watch some crime shows because I want to educate myself more. So I see that a lot on those shows where it's almost an act of desperation, and you think that might snap them out of it and make them realize what they have.
Yeah, and there's so many different ways to care for people, right? And I think we kind of get stuck into care looking a particular way in that, we assume that caring for another person means we can't also care for ourselves. Like we have to be selfless and put the other person's needs first, right? Whereas I think like you can have care and accountability at the same time, but we're not very good at doing that. Like we don't have a great framework for that.
That is true. That is very true. I think, especially when you have children too, that you spread yourself too thin. And those are words I recall coming out of my mother's voice. Don't spread yourself too thin. If you want to take care of them, you need to be in your best form. So true. You need to be number one, and then you've got to evenly give out what you have left, but keep them for yourself.
That is such good advice. I love it, like even now, 33 years after her death, she's still spreading her wisdom.
Oh, definitely. But I honestly, I promise you this, if I close my eyes and I think and take that time and just think about her deep down, I can feel her hug. It's not gone. It's not gone. That's definitely helped me get through my days.
I bet it's so powerful.
Most definitely.
So your mother has in Guelph, she has a park named after her, Marianne's Park. Our intimate partner violence shelter, Marianne's Place, of course, named after her. And you told me she has a building on College named after her too, right?
That's correct.
Which building is it?
It's been a little bit of time since I've been there. I was at the opening. It's about the middle of College Avenue on the left-hand side, going toward the mall. And they have a plaque at the front door, and I really need to go get a picture of that. So that's on my list because I can't recall. But it was through Matrix, I believe, and Edward Pickersgill, who is a big member of Guelph that helps community. So it was him that put that into place. So
Yeah,
the fact.
that's interesting too. Yeah, because Edward having passed away and having left, also a violent legacy of his own. So,
And
messy.
the fact that our community is sworn not to let her death be in vain, and that they've worked to keep her memory alive is such an honor to us as a family and to anyone that she's helped with her counseling and her story.
Yeah, and just a last question. I wondered kind of how it feels for you, like knowing that there is this park and there is this building and this kind of physical legacy or this legacy of spaces to honor your mom.
It's such a showing of the appreciation for her, and knowing that her death isn't in vain. If it reaches one person, hopefully it helps a lot of people that need it. I just want to do what I can to be a part of this. Many years have gone by where I've wanted to reach out, but I didn't know how. So with my niece Shelley's story that was released, it brought us closer together, and therefore brought this meeting with Women in Crisis to happen.
Nice. Yeah, so that's Shelley Patnaud who spoke about her story last year. Yeah.
That's correct.
Also just a powerful force.
Yes, and I think she was quite young when my mother passed, but it obviously left an impact on her to know and recognize the signs and for her to get help.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the strongest things that we can do is support each other in that way, like sharing knowledge, checking in on each other, trying to support each other, because not everybody who's experiencing violence like wants to go and talk to a gender-based violence organization. They don't necessarily want to go and talk to a counselor, but if they have, friends and family who are around them who are supportive, it's life-changing, it's game-changing.
Very well said, especially, even, if you're in your 20s and you're going through this and you don't have parents that you can go to or friends that can relate. It's just nice to have this out there and visible and people knowing how to reach out and how to get that help. And like there's somebody there that genuinely cares. They helped my family tremendously. You all help my family tremendously.
That's so kind of you to say. Is there anything else you wanted to share before we wrap up? Any last thoughts that are coming to you? And if the answer is no, that's 100% fine.
I got up early this morning and took all these notes to try and get myself, because I wanted to make sure I didn't miss anything. Because last time I kind of just winged it, and I don't know if I captured everything that I wanted to. So
You did a
I
great
feel,
job.
oh, thank you so much. I've been moving on. I have a beautiful family of three with three sons that I adore and that treat me so well, and a wonderful partner that's here with me, supporting me. And it took a while, but I got there, and I just love him dearly.
And you deserve that.
No, thank you.
I'm so pleased and I'm so glad that we've gotten to know each other a little bit better and do these projects together, like the fundraising video you did a little earlier and yeah, this too. It was such a pleasure, and to get to hear all of these beautiful things about your mother is really it's really a gift. Thank you for sharing that.
Well, thank you, Cindy, very much.
We'll link to resources in the show notes. The Wicked Podcast is brought to you from Between the Lakes Treaty 3 territory. We're grateful to live and work where we do, and we're committed to working towards reconciliation and justice with the Indigenous stewards of this land. Thank you again to Mia for sharing the story, and thanks to you for listening.